is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
Good day and welcome to Boarding Pass 75, everyone, operating on May 3rd, 2021. This is Drew and I'm here with my fellow industry insider, Doug. We're two av geeks creating a network for airline, airplane, airport, and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. Doug, we have another fringe av geek on the show, my friend Andy, who left the industry about 10 years ago. We used to work together, had a wonderful time. We miss Andy. You know, why would you leave aviation?
Yeah, Doug? Why would anyone leave? I'm really curious to hear this. We'll do our best to drag you back into it, Andy. But first, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. As far as why I left, I think that might be a story for later on in the show.
Yeah, right now. So tell us how you got into the industry and what and why you went in another direction.
All right. So I got into the industry because as a teenager, I was super into all things aviation.
Okay.
I was doing the whole private pilot training and all that stuff. And I was working this restaurant job that I absolutely hated. And one day I was cruising on Craigslist and
as one does.
As one does. And so I got hired on as a ramp service agent. After a few months of that, lateral transfer, customer service agent, a few months of that, lateral transfer, operations agent. And a few months after that, applied for operations supervisor, as we used to call them zone controllers.
Yep.
And did that for a couple of years. And then I left because we were losing the contract and everything got so toxic that I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yep. So you got your start on Craigslist? Seriously?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
So, so the airline,
that was 2010.
But Andy, so they were advertising on Craigslist for employees?
Absolutely.
Wow. I didn't even know that. Okay. Hmm. It worked because you were cruising Craigslist and then you happened upon them. Doug, this guy's a natural. I mean, you have a radio voice. you literally sound like a DJ. We're not sure we can make you come back to the aviation side, Andy, but you'll give us some perspective today as a semi-civilian when we talk about aviation stuff and your bartender knowledge, because you were a bartender for a while. You can help us navigate through some pre-departure cocktails, because I think people know that Doug and I like to stop at lounges, be lounge lizards, drink, and then we love our pre-departure cocktails. Doug, Andy, and I met last week. We had happy hour, and you know he's a bartender, so I wanted to try different drinks. So I think we tried almost every drink at that. What was it? The Walrus Oyster Bar, or whatever in Maryland. Doug, what's our favorite drink?
Old Fashioned.
Yep.
Can't go wrong with an Old Fashioned.
Yeah, but I think you guys tried a new one, right, Drew?
Yes. So I was checking cocktails because I was meeting Andy and I think we were talking about cocktails. Yeah. I was asking Andy, what is in an Old Fashioned? And he was telling me. So then before I met him there, I was like, I should be more knowledgeable about this stuff. So I watched a YouTube video for half an hour with all the classic cocktails. And there's one that's called an Aviation. Have you ever heard of this?
Never heard of it. No.
Andy, can you tell us what that cocktail is?
At least in this region of the US, if you go to most bars and you order an Aviation, the bartender is going to look at you as if you have potatoes growing out of your ears or something like that. You've got six heads. But some bars will be able to make one. It's only like your high dollar fancy pants dress code steakhouses that are going to have all of the ingredients for a proper Aviation cocktail. Most of the places, you're going to get, you're still going to get your gin. You're still going to get a maraschino liqueur and you're still going to get lemon juice, but, only at the high dollar places are they actually going to use creme de violette. Creme de violette is a cordial that uses violet flowers, gorgeous color to it. And, my very favorite drink plugging.
That
Mr.
is your
Reynolds,
favorite drink.
It is. And plugging Mr. Reynolds' product, the Aviation Gin works fantastically in aviation cocktails.
So, Doug, we're going to have to try one of these at the clubs this week when we go to Alaska and see if we want to make that the official drink of the Next Trip Podcast.
I don't know what club we're going to find the ingredients for an aviation at. We can try. We'll
Not
see.
Even at the Amex Club? You don't think they'd be able to?
I mean, maybe at a BA club.
I don't know. The Amex clubs are, I think, fancier than the BA clubs in terms of like alcohol stuff.
I've never been to an Amex club, so I wouldn't know. Closest to an Amex club I've been in was a TWA club that got turned into a crew room.
We actually did a poll, you guys, to see what AvGeeks like to drink for their pre-departure drink. So what you would like. And we got some interesting responses. And I have the poll results here. Andy, you want to read the choices and what people chose?
Sure thing, Drew. At the top, we had whiskey or rum drinks at 36%, beer at 27%, wine and vodka tied at 18%, and an honorable mention of champagne for Speedbird Julie and Martin Hammer.
Although she calls it bubbles.
Bubbles, yeah.
Bubbles.
So actually, if I could quickly step off script and segue, when you are flying, what is your very favorite pre-departure cocktail? Now, you can say, because I love me an old-fashioned as much as you guys do, other than the old-fashioned, what is a drink you gotta have before you go fly?
All right, Doug.
Time of day dependent. If it's morning, I'll get a screwdriver.
Yeah, I do the same.
Yeah.
What if it's afternoon?
I don't know. I'm surprised the beer was as high as it was, especially if you're a window seat kind of person, because you have too many beers and you're gonna have to get up and go pretty frequently during the flight. I don't know. I'm partial to red wine.
Doug, for me, it's a rum and coke or a scotch and coke to start, because I'll have my red wine with the meal later.
True.
Andy, what about you? If they're not gonna be able to make you an aviation on any of these carriers unless you're on a private jet, and even
pretty
then.
Much. I do love me the old fashioned. But my go-to pre-departure is either a Cuba Libre, which is dark rum, Coke, and lime juice, or just a simple whiskey ginger.
Yeah, another one I'm having a lot is a vodka soda with lime. It's simple.
Yeah, I enjoy gin and tonic too. All right, well, Andy, before we go to the news briefs, we have to confirm your AvGeek status. We do this for all of our guests that we have on the show. Can you tell us what your favorite aviation moment was?
Drew actually should remember this. At the time I was working at Dulles, and I drove in an hour from home, drove to work. And I came in on my day off to watch Discovery get delivered to Dulles.
To the Smithsonian. Oh, wow. Yes.
Because the Udvar-Hazy Center is connected to Dulles.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a fair number of photos that I still to this day have. My top aviation moment is when Discovery came to Dulles. Runner-up would be when the U.S. Airways Airbus went down in the Hudson. When that happened, I was buzzing around the pattern at a tiny little municipal airport doing engine outs. As we were taxiing on in my naive youth, I looked at my instructor and I went, but these things get checked out all the time, and when would I have an engine go out on me? And he says, you never know. And then we park and we go inside, and the dispatcher sitting at the desk going, hey guys, check this out.
Wow.
His Airbus just lost both engines in the Hudson.
That's incredible. Wow. Thanks for sharing that with us, Andy. But I do know that you've got a story about a 747 from Heathrow to San Fran and business class. Drew is shaking his head, so I'm curious to hear about this. So tell us about that. How'd you get to Heathrow, and what's this that you did that says that you self-downgraded to economy?
So Drew and I have a very fond place in our hearts for the 747.
As do 99% of our listeners.
As we all do.
as everyone ought to. And so when United was mothballing their 47 fleet, we decided that we wanted to have kind of one last hurrah of a final send off, one final flight on a 7-4. And in our case, we flew out from Dulles to Heathrow. And we did that on an 87. That was my first time on a 7-8.
Notice he said 87.
And then he said 7-8.
All right, equal opportunity.
Okay. And so we took Sparky out to London.
You remember that, Doug?
Sparky.
You
hear what he
said?
Yeah.
These are the nicknames.
Yeah. Okay.
And and then we spent 22 hours in London.
So we got that. This flight was full. We were lucky to get two seats together. We had the, you had the aisle, I had the middle. So the section of three, didn't even get a window.
No. We were back in the nosebleeds.
Right.
But there was no middle seat in between us. There's an empty middle suite. There is an empty middle seat.
No. So this is where Andy drank too much at the club before we boarded because
too many aviations.
Yeah. Too many aviations or whatever they had in the club. So you were in the aisle. I was in the middle. And I remember this because there was a girl on the window, the seat that I should have had.
You're right.
Right. And she left the shade closed the whole flight.
The whole time. And we're both sitting there going like,
and it was a nighttime flight.
How could you?
Well, yeah, and then I politely asked her during landing, hey, can you open that for landing? And she looked at me and she's like, no. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. Not even for landing.
All right, so tell me about the 747 then.
Fly to Heathrow. 22 hours later, we hopped on a 7-4 going to San Francisco. We ended up main deck business. Mm-hmm. Which it was my first time in business on a 47. It was also my first time on a 47 in general. I'd walked on them a couple times, but never been off the deck on one. We ended up walking around. We ended up standing in the galley in our socks, chatting with the flight attendants, and then when they started to do their whole prep for descent, we pulled our shoes on and we went to an empty row in economy. Just behind the wing on the left-hand side of the aircraft. And we went to a pair of empty rows because we didn't want to share a window.
No, not for that.
We would have strangled each other before we shared a window. he who can stay alive longest gets to enjoy the window. And so we self-downgraded to economy to watch and take photos as we were landing in at San Francisco.
Okay, that's not as bad as it sounds. If it was the last 30 minutes of the flight.
Oh, it was like the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And we did get weird looks, but once they realized we were... So we talked to the flight attendants about the 747, and this was a very senior crew. So they appreciated what we were doing too, because they were going to miss it. I think this was about a month before they were retired completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was 2017, Andy.
I think so. And one of the flight attendants, she was San Francisco based. She had like 35 years with United. She was San Francisco based, but she lived in Sydney and she had only ever worked 47s.
Wow.
How awesome is that? You know, and she made an announcement, and I don't know if people were supposed to laugh, because I felt bad because I was the only one laughing. So we're gliding in over San Francisco Bay. And she's like, outside, you can see the Golden Gate Bridge and the city of San Francisco and the other city by the bay, Oakland. And I started laughing and I'm like, oh, shoot. Maybe she wasn't trying to be funny. All right. Well, that's no. Anything else on that, Andy? I mean, learned just now when we were prepping that he hardly remembers that flight. And I'm like, really, a flight on a 747 in business? It's probably because we had too many drinks at the club again.
We had too many drinks at the club, and we were running at that point. We'd been
tired.
We'd been up more or less for 36 hours.
Yeah.
By the time we got on board in the preceding 36 hours, between the two of us, I think we had 7 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had walked all around London. It was a great time. But next time, I think I'd stay a day longer.
All right, guys, let's get some work done. Drew, what do we have in the news this week?
All right, Doug, today in the news, just a couple of news stories. This is from USA Today. It's a new airline, $19 fares, $10 check bags, and flies out of small airports. Meet Avelo Airlines. Avelo launched this Wednesday with a flight from Burbank to Santa Rosa in California's wine country using 189-seat 737-800s. Avelo will focus on small airports and routes with less competition. Chairman Andrew Levy, with a background working at United and Allegiant, shared investors' concerns about starting an airline during a pandemic. The positives were that airport space was available and aircraft and parts were cheaper. Their last two 737s cost a third of pre-pandemic prices. Currently, they have three 737-800s and plan to fly from Burbank to Bozeman, Montana, Eugene, Oregon, Phoenix Mesa Gateway Airport. Avelo plans to have 11 planes by the end of the year. Fare started at $19. Check bag fees are only $10. Customers will be offered a bottled water and a snack. There's no Wi-Fi, and they plan to offer buy on board later on. What do you guys think?
Well, Drew, Andrew Levy, who's the CEO, made the comment about that this could be a bad time to start an airline. But I read in the Wall Street Journal this week that 91 airlines around the world are supposed to start this year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. If you look back at September 11th, JetBlue started right around that, and a couple other airlines, Virgin America started right in the middle of the financial crisis. Don't waste a good crisis. You've got gates that are open. You've got airplanes that are cheap, and you've got people who have been saving money over the past year and they've got cash to burn. They're getting vaccinated. They want to get back out there. Breeze is going to be starting later this year as well in the US. This may, to most, may not seem like a good time, but I think this is a great time.
Yeah. And yeah, we talked about people not wanting to go into an aviation career. That's exactly the wrong thing to do right now. Cause Doug has an interview this month, you know, and that just was out of the blue.
Yeah.
So, and Andy, a lot of the majors are hiring.
Yeah. I mean, right now you have a lot of the other existing carriers who are furloughing various employees. Mm-hmm. And so you've got people who are on furlough and they're looking for a paycheck. And so starting right now, yes, it's a big gamble, but if it pays off, it'll pay off big time. Cause again, you've got furloughed employees who are looking for work. You have cheaper aircraft, cheaper parts.
Right.
And some of the routes that they're doing, like Drew and I were talking offline before the show about flying from Burbank to Santa Rosa. That's a big money route if you run it often enough. Because at that point you're shuttling people with money to spend, you're shuttling them out to wine country. Mm-hmm. And so basically you grab people in LA that have money burning a hole in their pocket, $20 bus fare. They fly out to wine country. They hop on a bus. They hit a couple different wineries. $20 bus fare to get back.
Yeah. Well, Andy, you mentioned the furloughs. Our friend Eric, who we met at Dorkfest last fall, was actually on the inaugural from Burbank to Santa Rosa, and he was sending me messages real time. He said, literally still on board the Avelo inaugural. Flight attendant says, "Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome aboard Avelo Airlines Flight 101." I wonder where that flight attendant was furloughed
from America.
Exactly. He said that everyone on the plane laughed. Big round of applause. Since he was on the inaugural, he said he sat next to the CFO on one flight and then the COO on the other flight. He said that it was the slimline Recaro seats, but the rumor is that some of the other aircraft have the older style seats and a different seating configuration. He said that they were comfortable. They were 29 inches of pitch, but 29, but he said that it wasn't bad for an hour. Like Amy said, it's a bus fare. Paid 19 bucks for it.
Yeah.
Well, so I think you're going to see more of this because business travel won't be back for a little bit, but leisure travel is coming back with a vengeance, isn't it? I mean, it seems like everyone wants just to go someplace. Mm-hmm. And this airline is focusing on leisure travel. Just like Andy said, rich people in Los Angeles that want to go to wine country, they're going to buy this. And then it's not just if you live in Santa Rosa, that commute, and Doug, you know this, from Santa Rosa to SFO, that could be a 2-hour commute over
or the more bridge. Easily. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a good concept. Yeah,
and that's actually something that I didn't realize until that you saying that popped into my head is you can also, like a commuter shuttle, over on the East Coast, we see a lot of people who are, they'll take a commuter from from National and they'll commute up to New York.
Right.
Or they'll even commute Richmond to DC and they'll fly.
They'll fly. Yeah.
And if you find a carrier that's offering $19 fares, then why bother driving?
Exactly. But you know, looking on at a big picture, so you guys, the routes that airlines are launching right now are Dulles to Athens, Chicago to Reykjavik.
They're all leisure.
New York to Anchorage. It's all leisure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're finding a lot of people that want to pay. So Athens, the bookings are like strong I'm hearing. Leisure travel is the place to be right now until business comes back.
Well, moving on, we've got two Alaska Airlines stories. And the first one comes from CNN, but it was reported everywhere. Alaska Airlines banned state lawmaker for her continued refusal to comply with mask mandate. An Alaska state lawmaker who had called flight attendants mask bullies and clashed with airline employees on a video over mask rolls is banned from Alaska Airlines, the airline said in a statement. Alaska operates the only regular flights between her home north of Anchorage and the state capital, Juneau. For those of you who don't know Alaska's geography, take a look at a map while we explain this next part.
Yeah.
Last Sunday, she had to drive more than 14 hours, including a portion of the trip through Canada, and then take a ferry to reach Juneau on Monday to be present to vote on a bill. The FAA said it's looking into the issue and that it's strictly enforcing a zero tolerance policy toward passengers who cause disturbances on flights or fail to obey flight crew instructions. Guys, you have the floor. Oh, on my this God. One.
She just needs to bake them a cake and just play nice and put this behind her, because how can she be a politician in Alaska if she can't get from her home to Juneau to vote on a bill?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking she's going to have to move to Juneau, but then she's not living where she's representing her constituents. So it's tough. Yeah. And I'm curious how she did it, because I know that border crossings between Canada and the US are mainly closed
right
now. So I wonder if chances
are she probably skated by because it was official travel.
I wonder if this border crossing might be open still, because there is no way to drive from one part of the state to the other. So there might be exemptions there.
Yeah.
It could be you're allowed to stay on this highway, but you're not allowed to get off.
Yeah.
and the RCMP will happily fine you very many dollars for getting off for anything other than gas.
Yeah. You know, when I was reading the story, I literally started laughing when they were talking about how she had to go through a foreign country, drive 14 hours, take a ferry.
And it's
just don't be dumb.
Don't be dumb. Wear a mask. Come on. Don't try to prove some point.
Just wear a mask.
Yeah. Hopefully a few more months, but we'll see. All right. Anything else on that?
No.
Okay.
Just a friendly reminder that failure to comply with crew instructions is a federal offense. Don't do it.
Thanks for the public service.
If the flight crew tells you to sit down, put on your mask, and put on your seatbelt, it is in your best interest to sit down, put on your mask, and put on your seatbelt.
Right. Even if you don't agree, just do it. And then afterwards, write to customer service if you didn't like the way she told you. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Next story. All right. This one, we're going to stay with Alaska Airlines. Everyone knows how I feel about special liveries. I'm not a fan of special liveries, but this one I like. So this Alaska Airlines unveiled a new plane. It's a diversity campaign that aims to advance racial equality. The airline partnered with UNCF, which is a Black College Fund, to advance racial equity in their own company and inspire marginalized groups to take to the skies. The airline painted a 737-900 with quotes from Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela, Maya Angelou, and artwork inspired by the civil rights movement. Doug, it kind of looks like our Star Wars plane.
It does. I think it looks great. I think this is awesome what Alaska did. But I'm going to bring it back to you real quickly, Drew. This is why you never say with conviction that you hate something or you dislike something. Because then when something good like this does come out, I'm not going to lie. When I saw this article for the first time, my first thought was, oh boy, what's Drew going to say about this one? Because he can't dislike it. But he dislikes all special liveries.
Okay.
And Andy, I believe you have I don't want to get away from this story. Let's finish this story. And then I think Andy has a story about Drew and special liveries.
Disclaimer. So I'm not a fan of special liveries, but if it supports a cause or it promotes some history of the airline or the employees, I love it. But
this is great.
If you're advertising McDonald's or some hotel or something, you know, I don't care for that.
Yeah.
But Andy, you have a story.
So what I'm hearing is that Drew hates all special
hate livery, is a strong word,
except
all of these.
Except all of these. So you're kind of canceling out your I hate all.
Yeah. You and hate that whole most. I hate that wasn't for public
most.
That was a text to Doug. You know, it was a random thought, and all of a sudden, I hate all these planes.
Words taken out of context.
Well, so our group text when we got you that special livery Eva Air, the name of the group text was Drew Hates Special Liveries. All right, Andy, 2 minutes or less. What's this story about Drew and special liveries that you told before we started recording?
So at one point when I was still working at Dulles United, painted up a Airbus with the Friendship United livery. I think it was they brought it back from like the 1970s. I think it was
With the stars, yeah, late 60s. Like the red and blue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty nice looking airplane. And and our friend Drew over here called up friends and headquarters to see when it was going to be coming to Dulles, because they put it on a narrow body so that it could go to everywhere. And Drew was getting unhappy because he was seeing it showing up on all of these different plane spotter groups and forums and websites. And he was going, oh, come on. When are we going to see it at Dulles? When's Dulles going to get a turn?
I don't remember all this detail, but I'll accept. It is a cool looking plane.
They always say that there's a moment in your life where something happens that shifts the way you think about things. So, Drew, what was that moment for you for special liveries? Did you almost get hit by one, or did you get kicked off of one? Like, there's got to be some traumatic event in your life.
Oh yeah. So okay.
That led to this. I won't say hatred, this disdain for special liveries.
I think so. Now I'm having to dig back. I mean, I didn't prep for this question, but if I have to think back, I worked for Reno Air, mm-hmm. which had an awesome livery. Andy, I don't know if you remember what that looked like. It was beautiful, green, silver, mountains on the tail. And I think why I have a disdain for it now that you're counseling me, or you know, on this.
I've been doing interview prep, so I'm used to these tough questions.
Yeah, so I don't remember the name of this airline. I want to say Sun Country, but I think it was more low budget than that. I think it was like Laughlin Air or something. And I remember it was a 737. And it had like some casino with some stripper on the
It was a Colorado Springs based Vanguard. Yeah. Was it Vanguard? It might have been Vanguard. Yeah,
they had a stripper on the tail. They had some casino, and then they also had a Bart Simpson plane.
Yes,
they had a Bart Simpson. They were just advertising anyone that wanted to give them a dollar, and I thought that's just so. You know, I didn't like the way it looked. I thought it looked tacky compared to our Reno Air, which had a nice livery and a good brand.
No, it wasn't Vanguard. I just looked up pictures. I'm trying to remember, like, but I do know
Laughlin Air.
Yeah, I do know what you're talking leisure. About.
I mean, how else is a low budget smaller airline gonna buy the CEO a new car every month? Come on,
that's not my problem though. That's probably why, now that you mention it, because I remember those and they were just so tacky looking. We were talking about Alaska Airlines until we went into a tangent. Doug, so we're going to Alaska Friday.
It's this week.
This week. Yes. It's coming up. It's our milk run. So can you tell everyone what we know for sure about our trip?
Yeah. So first of all, I looked it up again this morning, and all the restrictions have been lifted for Alaska. Right. You don't need a COVID-19 negative test. You don't need vaccination. So we're good on the restriction front. But yeah, Drew and I, we fly up to Seattle on Friday, and then Saturday morning, 8:30, we're on the milk run up to through several different stops, eventually getting to Anchorage. So if you guys are in Seattle on Friday night, send us a message, let us know. We'll try and meet up with you somewhere downtown. And then we'll meet up at the gate a little bit before the flight on Saturday morning. And then we're going to go to the Moose's Tooth for dinner, 6:30-ish on Saturday night, and then spotting probably around 10. We'll post on the website and mention it on Twitter, but Sunday morning around 10 o'clock, I should be able to join you guys for at least 30 minutes, probably 30 minutes to an hour before I have to go catch my flight home.
Okay. Yeah. Doug has an important interview, so he has to leave us on the 9th, but I'll be there. So some of our listeners will be there, and we have a lot of people going now. It's like 10 to 15 now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it'll be awesome meetup. So this won't be the last. We have some other trips that we're talking about. So as soon as we can firm up some plans, we're thinking about Los Angeles. What else? Seattle possibly in July. So
yeah.
Stay tuned.
Definitely. Because of this, we're not sure when the next episode is going to air. We don't know when we're going to record, when we'll have time to edit. So the next couple of weeks might be a little bit weird. Don't think that something is up or something is wrong if it doesn't release at the normal time. Hopefully we'll have an extra section as well talking about some of our flights.
All right, so let's get to our Ops Center talk. Doug, for Ops Topic, we're going to discuss something that happened in your DC-10 simulator last week. You said you wanted to save it for the show, so now's the time. But let's avsplain what the DC-10 is to our younger listeners who may have never seen one in person. Andy, why don't you go through our DC-10 fact sheet?
Sure thing. The DC-10 is a three-engined wide-body jet built in the 1970s to satisfy the airline's desire for a mid-range aircraft smaller than a 747. The DC-10 was a major part of the fleets of United, American, and Northwest. Delta and Pan Am also flew a few examples. All right, Doug, tell us what happened.
I will in a second, but that sounded like a radio commercial. I was trying not to laugh during that. That was great.
I could tell you were trying to hold it in.
Yeah, Drew, maybe when we have a fact sheet for our other discussions, we should send it to Andy and have him record it ahead of time, and then we can just plug it in. That was smooth. That was so much better than we.
Who was the one who used to do the countdown? It was on the radio. He was so smooth. It sounded like Andy. He used to do the top 40 countdown.
The top 40.
It's this old guy. I can't remember.
Casey Kasem.
Yeah. You run circles, run.
Yeah, that's funny. All right. So what happened this week? As you guys know, I have to certify the Sims, test it, push it to the limit. We finished on late Tuesday night, and one of the maintenance guys who was in there with me tapped me on the shoulder and asked me if I was up for a challenge. And I said, of course I'm up for a challenge. He said, okay, I'm going to put you on the most difficult runway, which it's this undulating runway, a place in the world. I can't mention where it is, unfortunately, but it's a place that we go that has a very large runway undulation. He said, you have to start uphill. Take off, do a 180, do a touch and go on the opposite direction, take off again, do another 180, land, full stop, and the time stops when the airplane comes to a complete stop. His record, he had been doing it in the sim, I guess, for several months as he was testing the sim, 4 minutes and 24 seconds.
Oh, wow.
So I had to beat 4 minutes and 24 seconds in a DC-10, yanking and banking. Mind you, if we over G the airplane, if we touch outside of any limitations, the sim crashes. It tells you if you're stressing it too much. Yeah. So you can't just get up there and get into the stall and recover from it, bounce, whatever. This was literally, and I am not joking, this was the most stressful flying I have ever done in my life. Because of course I want to beat the record.
Yeah, I
was sweating so bad when I landed. Mm-hmm. And the next morning my entire body was sore because I was just so tense as I was yanking and banking this thing. I ended up coming to a full stop at 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Explain this to me. So you take off, you do a sharp bank to the right,
take off,
and then you go around. And
I started by going to the left and then immediately coming back right, and then I kind of overshot and then corrected back to the runway. So it looked like a big oval type thing. I could have probably gone around to the right, but that would have set me up for a really difficult touch and go. I needed to go a little bit left before coming back right, but then I had to overbank it and pull to tighten it up. I had to slow down because otherwise my power is going to be carrying me more through the turn.
Yeah.
I had to do the touch and go, take off again, and then do the same thing one more time, come back around, and then full stop. I wish that I had known about this for the last couple of years as I was certifying the Sims. This was my last time doing it, but I told my replacement and I told my boss about it and said, guys, you have to do this every single time. So now I own the record, the office record, and we're just going to keep tabs of it and see if anyone can beat the record.
So do you have a pretty steep bank? Is it a steep drop when you're coming back into land?
It is. I was close to 90 degrees angle of bank. And if anyone knows anything about airplane aerodynamics, when you do that, you start to lose altitude. So I had to put some rudder in and then ease out of it to get a little more altitude, because otherwise you just slice straight through and hit the ground.
Yeah, I was about to say, you must have had at least your foot on the floor.
I did. Yeah. And even then I was still losing altitude. And that's part of the reason why I was so sore, was because it was just all this shifting back and forth, and we're on motion. So the sim is rocking along with us as we do. It was awesome. It was so much fun.
Did you have full flaps the whole time?
Mm-mm. No, I was varying flaps based on once you roll out and you're heading back towards the runway, you want to speed up, because otherwise you're going to lose time. But as you're going away from the runway, you want to slow down. You need more flaps so you can make that tighter turn so that you're closer to the runway.
And I mean, what are your flap detents on the DC-10?
It's variable between 5 and 25, and then 35 and 50.
50?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a plane that has that much of a flap.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
In the 1970s, Cessna was putting 50-degree flaps on the 172s.
Interesting.
Okay.
Which was great to fly in, because if you're coming in hot onto the runway, you just open up the barn doors and it's
barn doors.
Barn doors. There it is. Yep.
There. I was going to say that. All right, but we have anything more on that flight?
No, because Andy and I have a lot of questions. Awesome.
Yeah, Andy, yours is the first one. We were talking about this as we were drinking.
Sure. So, what happens when you lose a third engine?
Depends on which engine it is. If it's the center engine, which actually let's jump ahead to that question. So
yeah.
You guys said, why is the tail engine the third? Why is it not the second going left to right? It is the second. The tail engine is engine number two.
Oh, okay. So that's just third lever, second lever.
Yeah, we just call it the third engine because it was an afterthought. It's not actually number three. So the left wing engine is number one, tail engine is number two, and then the wing engine is number three. We just call it the third engine. So if we lose number two, we don't have any sort of left right asymmetric thrust. So it's very easy to fly. If we lose one of the wing engines, then we've got to put a bunch of rudder in. Like Andy said, stomp the boot to the floor, whatever you want to call it. A lot of rudder. It takes quite a bit, especially at heavier weights where we have a much higher thrust setting. Once we lose the thrust, it really yaws one side or the other, just depending on where the failed engine is.
So when you lose,
I'm guessing there's sorry for stepping on you.
No, go ahead.
I'm guessing they haven't gotten around to installing rudder trim on there.
There is rudder trim, but it's manual. So usually what we do is once we get clean and we get to the speed that we want, we'll manually put the trim in.
Okay.
Then if we lose an engine, we have to come back around for landing. As you start to slow down, you have to take some of that rudder trim out, because the faster speeds and the lower speeds require different trim settings.
So do the newer planes do that automatically?
Most of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, if you want to see something hilarious, just take a 777 captain and stick them in a private trainer.
Yeah, because they won't know what to do.
Yeah, I joke with our 777 captains, like when they're talking about their problems, it's like, don't you just sit in there and just type in LHR and hit send?
And then cross your arms and you go.
That's why they fly Cirruses on the weekends.
Yeah.
All right, so more questions. So explain why the third engine, which we know for pilots is the number two engine when you're in there, why was that an afterthought? You talked about this on a previous episode, but it was so interesting and you just mentioned it.
Yeah, the original design for the DC-10 was a two-engine airplane, and American Airlines was the one who approached McDonnell Douglas about it and asked to have a third put on there, because when they designed the DC-10, McDonnell Douglas's plan for it was to go into places like LaGuardia, DCA, Washington National, short field where they're capacity limited or it's space limited, but they could get a lot of people on one airplane so they don't have to fly as many flights in. American came to McDonnell Douglas and asked for the third engine, forward looking, hoping that they could use it for transatlantic, because at the time there was no such thing as ETOPS, which is the extended twin operations, which means oceanic flying. So with the third engine, they don't have to be within a certain distance of a suitable alternate, and that's why. Whereas the L-1011 was originally designed from the start with three, and so it does look like an afterthought because it was.
Yeah. And that's what we were talking about. We're like, why is it that the TriStar, it looks like that third engine or the tail engine was meant to be there on the DC-10. It looks like you just took some super glue, put a pile
on it. Basically. Yeah.
Speed tape.
Yeah.
I'll take our fourth question that we marked down, which is, have you been in a plane with better flight deck visibility than the DC-10?
No, the windows are huge. They're awesome.
Yeah, it looks like an office, you know, it's like a nice space, like a lot, you know, the windows look like you're in a house. There's like no lack of visibility.
Yeah. The 757 has pretty big windows as well. I've never flown it personally, but just being on the flight deck before or after a flight, 757 has pretty big windows, but I don't, nothing beats the windows of the DC-10 for sure.
Have you been in a TriStar?
I have not, no.
Okay, that has pretty big windows too. Mm-hmm. You flew an A330 simulator not too long ago. Between that and the DC-10, which would you choose as your daily commuter?
DC-10, for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. But part of the reason why is I've never flown an Airbus. People who are trained on the Airbus and fly it swear by it. They love it. I think if I went through formal training on an Airbus, I might change my mind. But as I was flying that A330 sim, I didn't like how automated it was because the DC-10 is such a hands-on airplane. And the A330 was not. It was the opposite. And I was trying to fly the A330 sim, like the DC-10. And the guy operating the sim was like, "Why? What are you doing? Why do you have the autopilot off? Why do you have the auto throttles off?" And I said, "Because I want to experience it." And I had a really difficult time flying it because of that.
What are the tightest visibility parameters that you have successfully landed in on the DC-10?
That's a good question. So you guys were going to ask if I've done a zero vis landing, and no, I have not, because our airplane is not Cat 3 ILS certified. Cat 3 ILS is down to 0.0. We're a Cat 1, which means 200 and a half is the lowest that we can go. What that means for the non-aviation folk is 200 feet ceilings, which means that you break out of the weather a little less than a mile from the, it's actually about a half mile from the runway. Basically, you break out of the clouds, you can see the threshold of the runway, you can continue, and you bring it down for a landing with a half mile viz. Cat 3 would be 0.0. We're not certified for that. So some commercial planes can land with 100% fog, where you can't even see the runway until you touch down.
In a month or a couple months, you're going to be leaving that airplane. How are you going to miss it?
Well, not technically, because I'll still be flying it in the reserves. That's right. On the weekends, right, and a couple times a month. I will miss flying it as frequently as I do. Before we end this awesome show that we did with Andy today, let's just real quickly read some great feedback that we got from a listener named Kyle. He said, "Hey, Doug and Drew, love the podcast. Been listening for the last 5 months. It's grown to be my favorite aviation travel podcast. He's been working for Boeing for the last 2 years, and he's been an av geek as long as he can remember. He used to work on the control loss for some of the legacy planes like the 737 MAX, 747, 787. Although recently he's pivoted to the lesser known side of the commercial aerospace due to COVID. He's working on the CST-100 Starliner." We're going to have to look into that. I'm not familiar with that.
I'm already Googling that.
"He's been working lots of late night shifts to get ready to fly the next test flight to the ISS. Okay, so it's Boeing's spaceship that they're working on. So yeah, that's awesome. "As I write this, I'm doing just that. I'm flying a simulated mission and I'm stuck monitoring systems as I orbit Earth for the next 6 hours. Anyways, I just thought I'd reach out to you and introduce myself and express my gratitude. Your discussion on the last episode of getting into the airlines prompted me to write in as I've gone a different route to get to the aviation industry, coming from the engineering side of things, which we didn't even think to mention last week." Yeah.
So true.
"Although I don't get the flight benefits like you do at the airlines, engineering is another great route to get into the industry." So thank you very much for that, Kyle. That's awesome feedback. All right. Well, Andy, it was really nice meeting you. Thanks for av geeking with us and sharing your stories.
Absolutely. It's been an absolute pleasure, guys.
All right. Thanks for joining, Andy. And let's meet up for happy hour again and talk about airplanes. I'm sure there were a few cocktails we didn't cross off the list last time. Not many.
It sounds not like many not many. At all.
To our listeners, this podcast is your show, so go on our website, nexttripnetwork.com, and let us know what's on your mind so we can talk about it, or give us your feedback. You can also follow us on Twitter at nexttrippodcast.
Drew, I'll see you at San Francisco Airport on Friday morning.
Yep, looking forward to it.
Really looking forward to it. Thanks to all of our listeners for your support and for joining the conversation. We'll see you next week, and in the meantime, stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.
To you gin and tonic lovers, make sure that you get yourself a little keychain blacklight so that you can tell if the club is stiffing you and giving you soda water instead of tonic water.
Oh my goodness.
Because the quinine and tonic water. You can check that
with a black. The quinine shows up.
The quinine is UV reactive. And so if you push your little black light up against it and it doesn't light up, you have club soda.
How dare you give me club soda instead of tonic?
And if it lights up like the pillow at a Motel 6, then you got the right stuff. Sorry, children.